The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
It's going up on a Tuesday. Good morning, everybody. That's a real dated reference now, but you guys remember the song. Welcome to First Take. Stephen A. is off today, but don't you worry. You're in good hands. Crewed up. J.J. Redick in studio. Good to see you, sir. Marcus Spears, Swagoo, gracing your screen, and the one and only Tim Legler. How is everybody feeling this morning?
Absolutely.
Molly Q, we good.
All good.
We're good?
Yes.
All right, good.
Ready.
We got a lot of good stuff to talk about, so let's do this. And you know where we're starting. So, according to The Athletic, Brooklyn's Kyrie Irving, who has a June 29th deadline on his nearly $37 million player option for the 2022-23 season, has had conversations about his future with the Nets gone stagnant. And an impasse currently exists among the parties that could clear the way for the seven-time All-Star to consider the open market. If this turns out to be the case with Kyrie, and it is not there yet, let me be clear. Potential suitors, according to The Athletic: the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Knicks. All right. JJ, starting with you. Should the Nets give Kyrie a max extension?
Let me start this by saying that Kyrie Irving is a max talent. He is a transcendent player. And I would argue that he's a top three most entertaining player. Mm-hmm. If I had to pay $100 for a basketball ticket, It's Stephen Curry, it's Ja Morant, it's Kyrie Irving. Those three guys are the most entertaining basketball players to me. But the reality of the situation, if we look at the last 3 years with the Brooklyn Nets, year one, he played 20 games of 72. Year two, he played 54 of 72. Last year, he played 29. And in each season, there were issues beyond just an injury. The first season, he didn't want to play on that team unless Kevin Durant was healthy, and obviously Kevin Durant sat out that season. No one could have predicted COVID and the effect that social justice movement and George Floyd's killing would have on Kyrie personally, and he elected not to go to the bubble. I applaud his decision on that. I think every guy had to make a personal choice about whether or not to go. Fact remains, he played in 20 games that season. The next season, he took an 11-day personal absence and missed 7 games. He only ended up playing in 54. And then, of course, this season, because the vaccine mandate, was unable to play for most of the year until that was lifted. So there's a reliability. There's an availability question, of course, but there's a reliability question around Kyrie Irving as it relates to at this point in his career. This is a guy also that previously had a number of injuries and hadn't played really a full season his entire career. If you are the Brooklyn Nets front office, if you are the Brooklyn Nets ownership, you have to plan years in advance. And giving Kyrie Irving a max extension, knowing what you've seen over the last 3 years, I don't think that's a great decision. The other thing I would say, given all the things that I just talked about, what does it say to Kyrie Irving if you are the Brooklyn Nets front office and you are the Brooklyn Nets ownership and you are willing to give him a max extension? What does that say about all the things that I just talked about? That it was okay. You get a pass for that. And then you would have to be insane to think that these sort of issues would not continue to pop up over the next 4 years. And again, he is an incredible basketball player, extremely talented. But I don't think he is reliable enough to give him a max extension at this point in his career. Okay.
So not based on talent, it's reliability and availability. Swagger, where are you on this?
Yep. We see it the same as far as reliability and availability that is called into question, but that's been called into question before they committed to Kyrie Irving, before he ever put a Brooklyn Nets uniform on. JJ is right. His points are very valid, but we've been dealing with this with Kyrie Irving for a long time before he got to Brooklyn. Here's the deal. I would say yes, because of the talent and what I've seen transpire in the NBA, the championship hungry franchises. And I get it. If we, like, I'm going off speculation, or I'm going off the idea that the Brooklyn Nets, to even be in these talks, or to even be entertaining these talks based on what JJ just laid out, it lets you know that they are still invested in Kyrie Irving. Because all conventional wisdom of what JJ just said is a guy that you're trying to ask to walk away. You're trying to figure out a way to facilitate him being on another team. But I look at Brooklyn in particular, their particular situation. I'm not talking about the rest of the league, and I understand what the Supermax is and how you're projecting, but what Brooklyn has shown me already, the Nets have shown me already, they are willing to capitulate. They are willing to go against the things that they said that they would do when it comes to Kyrie Irving in order to see him play basketball, to fill those seats in that stadium and in that arena, and also hopefully have a chance at some type of leadership evolving to keep Kyrie there. I know this sounds absolutely crazy. It sounds crazy to me, but I think the reason why we go in these circles about Kyrie Irving is what JJ just pointed out. The talent is elite. The talent is something that we've only seen few have that's ever touched the basketball, which convolutes and make this all problematic when you're trying to make a decision about keeping Kyrie on as a max player. Conventionally, it says, everything in my fiber says, let him walk, let him go somewhere else and find it. But also, I'm looking at a team that signed Ben Simmons after the saga with the 76ers, that let Kyrie come back after they said that they wouldn't. So to me, the Brooklyn Nets have already made this bed and put themselves in this position as an individual organization and franchise.
Legs?
Yeah, listen, obviously, I'm going to agree with both of these guys, and I'm going to start off by saying this. All three of us now get paid to make decisions sound simple because we don't have to make them, and that's our job now as analysts, right? So that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to say no. You can't do it for all the reasons JJ laid out and a few more. Here's the first. Like, so what are you paying a guy max money for in this situation? Because of expectations on what playoff success is going to look like. Well, do you realize that Kyrie Irving has played in as many playoff games in the last five seasons since he left Cleveland as he did in that one historic playoff run in Cleveland? So the recent history of, number one, being available when you need him most in the postseason or during a regular season to put you in position to have a higher seeding or whatever it may be, that hasn't been there. And then also hasn't been a big enough of a difference maker, despite the talent, in that current situation to get them through multiple rounds of the postseason. However you slice it, he's played 23 playoff games in the last 5 years after playing 22, I think, in one season in that championship run. So that's another reason. You've got to look at this hard if you're the Brooklyn Nets. Another thing is this, and JJ, you brought up a lot of great points about his lack of dependability and reliability. There's another caveat to this. Kyrie Irving himself often has said, this isn't the most important thing to him, right? Is that what you want to be thinking about from a front office perspective when you're about ready to lay down max money to a guy with the track record that we, the three of us, have just discussed? When he himself has said, hey, man, I don't lose sleep over this. This isn't the end of the world to me. I got bigger fish to fry than playing basketball. And I'm not saying that's not great that you have other interests and other things that are passions for you outside of the game. It's not what I'm saying. But I'm talking about when you start laying out that kind of money for expectations to lead us to a championship, that should be a little bit of a concern and factor in. Now, having said all of that, I also know this. It's a lot harder to get that kind of talent in the first place. They've already done that. He is wearing a Brooklyn Nets uniform. And once organizations have guys on that level, you typically tend to give them what you need to in order to keep them. Retaining them is actually easier a lot of times than getting that guy in the first place. And I think that's what Sean Marks is probably wrestling with. But add it all up, it comes down to this. Is talent alone enough? There are other factors when it comes to Kyrie Irving that make you think hard about this.
Swagoo. The word you used was capitulate. I didn't learn that word at Duke. I'm surprised you learned it at LSU. That's a hell of a word right there. That's the word I was looking for. That's the word I was looking. That's
y'all
really.
Y'all go to Duke to play basketball. Y'all don't go to learn.
That's true.
Stop it.
That's true. But that's really the word I was looking for, because
sense.
In a way, you're 100% correct in that when the Brooklyn Nets were making the decision about whether or not to sign Kyrie Irving in the first place back in the summer of 2019, they knew that it was a package deal. And so they knew that there was going to be potentially some baggage with Kyrie Irving based on mainly what happened that last season in Boston, which we can get into at some point later in the show. But they essentially capitulated at that moment. My point is, I don't know why after the last three seasons that you would be willing to double down on that. And if you look at what his numbers are, does he give you any sort of roster flexibility? Let's say he were to opt out. Let's say he were to opt in and then you trade him. That's another option, right? Then you, all of a sudden you start being able to build a more complete roster if you're the Brooklyn Nets. I'm not arguing with his talent. And to Legs's point, I'm not arguing that he can elevate a team to a championship level at all. I think one of the frustrations that we have as basketball fans is what we saw in 2016 in that finals. Those last three games, and of course the game winner in game seven, we saw how great Kyrie Irving can be in the clutch moments, in the biggest moments in basketball. And so to not have him available at times, that's really where the frustration lies. And Legs, I also agree with you on a point. Like, I've said this and I've been consistent on this. I have no problem. I don't with Kyrie Irving not being as interested in basketball as some other players. And he said it himself. I have no problem with Kyrie Irving being passionate about social justice causes. I have no problem with any of that. That's his choice. That's his journey. I literally applaud all of that. But if you are a franchise, if you are a franchise who has invested this amount of money already, invested your future already in Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, it does not make sense to me to then double down on this knowing what we know.
All right, let me transition here. Obviously, the best ability is availability. And there's a lot of angles we want to hit here. The suitors, KD, the Nets, all of it. And that's where I want to go now, focusing on the Nets. So when this story broke yesterday, Big Perk had a strong take saying all the pressure is on Brooklyn to figure this out. And if they don't, listen to this.
If I'm KD and the Brooklyn Nets don't get this deal done with Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie Irving leaves the Brooklyn Nets to sign with somebody else, like the Lakers and LeBron James, if I'm Kevin Durant, I want out.
All right, Legs, I'm starting with you. Should KD leave if Kyrie departs?
Well, I think so, because I look at what he's left with. I mean, what are you left with in that situation if you don't have Kyrie Irving? James Harden's already gone. You don't know. You have no idea what Ben Simmons is going to look like when he starts to play basketball again. So if you're Kevin Durant and you're going to be 34 at the start of next year, and by the way, we talk a lot about Kyrie Irving's lack of availability. You know, Kevin Durant in the last 8 years has missed 240 games that he has been unavailable to play for his team. 240 in the last 8 years. So he also now has a track record of some things that have affected his ability to be out there. Again, obviously no one's questioning Kevin Durant's talent and where he ranks, even now, after dealing with all of that, as one of the elite players in the game and what you're capable of doing with him. But at that point, what are you left with if you're Kevin Durant? And that's where he's going to have to assess, where am I at this stage in my career? And checking off that last narrative. And here's what I mean by that. For guys of his caliber, there are three different narratives. The first narrative is, are you a great player? Are you one of the game's greats? Obviously, check that box. The second narrative is, are you an integral part of a team that can win a championship? Well, check that box. He's got two rings last time I looked. But there's another narrative with guys on this level, and that narrative is, can you lead and uplift a group of guys or a franchise that hasn't been there previously? Can you do that? And that's the last box for Kevin Durant. And he thought that's what this was going to be about in Brooklyn. Joining with Kyrie and James Harden, and people you can criticize if you want, star players joining up. That's the way the league looks now. And he thought that's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to answer this because the Nets haven't won it. I'll be the best player. I'll take him to the promised land, and I will get that last narrative under control. That's what it was going to look like. If Kyrie Irving leaves, it doesn't look like that at all in Brooklyn. And that's when Kevin Durant's going to have to reassess, where can I go? If it is Brooklyn, great. But where do you guys think he would have to go to check off that last box and shut down the noise that surrounds Kevin Durant because he went to a team that had already won a championship to get his two rings.
All right, Marcus. Tim says yes. Where are you?
Listen, I say no. And I understand everything that Legs just said, but this has now become about who wants to play with Kevin Durant and can he lead a group? That's really what it boils down to. Like, we have all of these conversations. We know Kevin Durant is great. We know KD is the reason you win a lot of games and have an opportunity to make your way to a championship. Obviously, we talk about his talent. We talk about him being one of the greatest players we've ever seen. Arguably one of the best, arguably the best offensive player we've seen with his size and his ability to get buckets. But it really boils down to this for me, Legs. If Kyrie does depart, is there enough cachet or is there enough guys that look around this league and says, I'm going to go pair up with KD and we could win a championship? And now I'm not talking about talent, because that last box you talking about is really more about KD challenging everybody that he plays with, being the alpha as far as getting us to a championship. Does he understand how to get them there when you got players that have individual agendas? They may have gripes in certain situations. We found out how much Kyrie had a gripe with playing with LeBron, but they still won a championship. And I'm not making a comparison. I'm not saying KD needs to be LeBron or KD needs to be Giannis or any or these guys that lead guys to championships. What I'm saying is, do other players look at KD like that? Do other players look like he has that part of being a true great to lead them to a championship? I know in OKC when he had Russell Westbrook and James Harden, they were there. They were close and obviously gave up a 3-1 lead. I know in Brooklyn what the plan was to get James Harden and Kyrie Irving, play together, go win a championship, have that type of talent. Obviously going to Golden State where you team up with guys that had already done it, you know that narrative is not going to be the same. Here's what I said the day after the championship. I said, I hate that we are having a conversation about how KD is feeling more than talking about how Golden State went through a season, had a tremendous playoff run, and won a championship. I hated that the day after. But the reality is KD ain't gonna be able to run from that. And it's actually a sign of respect. That's why I was a little bit against him clapping back at Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley
saying
this.
We'll get into that in just a minute, Marcus. We'll get into the Charles Barkley in just a minute.
Right, but with him leaving Brooklyn, to me, shows another one of the scenarios of being able to knock Kevin Durant on the other things outside of his talent. That's the point I'm going to get to. And to your point, Molly, we'll get to that other point.
Yeah, in just a minute. All right, JJ, should KD leave if Kyrie does?
Before I answer the question, I took some notes on what you guys are saying. I just want to address a few things. First of all, let's start with Perk and the idea that Kyrie Irving can just go sign with the Lakers if he opts out. And, you know, let's assume Russell Westbrook is going to opt in. There's really no way for Kyrie Irving to go sign there. He would have to sign for the taxpayer mid-level, which is about $6 million, or a minimum contract, which is about 2.7. So I don't envision that scenario. Legs, on your point about Kevin Durant, those numbers, the amount of games he's missed over the last eight seasons, like, let's take into account that he did have an Achilles tear and he missed a full season. And he on average, he's missing about 22 games a season beyond that, which is still, don't get me wrong, a lot. But some of that is weighted by that Achilles tear, of course. And then I wanted to talk to your point about that third point you made about great players and building something from scratch. Like, to me, he pretty much did that. I know they didn't win a championship, but we talk about these asterisks next to championships. We talk about these what-ifs all the time. And you go back to that Bucks series in 2021. If Kyrie Irving doesn't get hurt, it's likely they win that series. It's probably likely they go on to win a championship. If James Harden doesn't have a hamstring injury that season, maybe they even win that series without Kyrie Irving. So there's always these what-ifs, of course. But he elevated that team. I mean, his Game 7 performance in that series was an all-time performance. And I want to get back to that point in a second. The thing you said about, Marcus, about how players view Kevin Durant, I can unequivocally say it. Players view Kevin Durant as one of the all-time greats, as one of the great players, guy that is the best player on a championship-level team. There's not many guys that people around the league view as the best player on a championship-level team. Kevin Durant's one of those guys. there's a notion that, like, the Nets essentially tried to stack chips, right? The Lakers tried to stack chips. Of course, Golden State got, you know, fortunate with the timing of 2016 and Kevin Durant being a free agent and this spike in the salary cap and Stephen Curry being on a less than max and Klay Thompson being on a less than max contract. Like, there's all these things that have to go right to still win a championship. The Nets tried to do that in 2021, bringing in Harden. You can't control injuries. Kevin Durant in 19, Klay Thompson in 19. Like, all these things have to go right for you to win a championship. And to me, that doesn't say anything about a player. It says more about the luck involved with reaching that all-time status of a championship team. It doesn't say anything about Kevin Durant that Kyrie Irving got hurt in that Bucks series or that James Harden had a hamstring injury. And we're going to get more into this about Kevin Durant and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I just wanted to point that out.
No, of course. We'll go there now. And we're also going to touch on Kyrie and what would be the potential best fit for Kyrie. We mentioned those teams. The Athletic had mentioned in terms of the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Knicks. We'll dive into all of that. Marcus, I was going to go to KD right now, if that's cool with you. Is there something else you wanted to add before I move on here?
No, we'll probably cover it in this next one, Molly. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. All right, so take a look here at KD's finals record with and without Steph Curry. Marinate on this for a second. So Durant's only trip to the finals without him came a decade ago against the Big Three. That was in South Beach, which he lost in five. He went 10-5 in three finals appearances with the Warriors, including 1-4 when he got hurt in 2019. Take a listen to Charles Barkley's comments on Durant.
Before KD gets that great respect from all the old heads, he's gonna have to win a championship as the guy, as the bus driver. Listen, he joined this that team had already won a championship, so no disrespect, that's just a fact. The old guys like myself, hey, KD's an all-time hell of a player, but until he is the guy on a championship team, we're not gonna ever give him the respect, I mean, that he probably deserves. And that's just the way it is. And like I say, the game hasn't changed. Kobe said it. LeBron said it. And so we're going to hold him to the same high standard.
All right. Sir Charles said that, and KD said this. All this expletive is nasty. Another terrible analogy from a hating old head that can't accept that we're making more bread than him. It's just timing, Chucky. Don't hate the player. Hate the game. I added that. All right, JJ, I'm starting with you. Do you have any issue with KD clapping back?
I don't have any issue with him clapping back. I don't have any issue with him clapping back on Twitter to random fans, Alex437-2890. I have zero issue with him clapping back to that person or that bot or Charles Barkley. I really don't. I love Charles Barkley, and he's been so great for our game and so great for media for so long. He's wrong in this. He's just flat out wrong to call Kevin Durant anything but the bus driver of those Warriors teams. And that is not, I want to be clear, that is not a knock on Steph Curry. Let's go to the Kevin Durant 2017 finals. 35 a game, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 steal, 1.6 blocks. Legs, his shooting splits that series, 56% from the field, 47% from three, 92% from the free throw line. The following year, 29-11, 7.5, 2.3 blocks a game, 52%, 41%, 96%. If that's not the bus driver, I don't know what is the bus driver.
Oh, listen, 100%. Listen, and this is where I'm at on this. Charles took it a little bit too far. I think, you know, he basically is giving Kevin Durant almost no credit for what went on in Golden State. When we use this analogy as the bus, now this is the new thing. And so the way I put it is, yes, he was the bus driver. He was the best player on those teams. Even Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson are going to tell you Kevin Durant was the best player on those teams. He was driving that bus, but it was a borrowed bus. The registration in that glove compartment has Steph Curry's name on it. All right, so he was borrowing the bus, but he absolutely was the guy that was the definitive best player on those teams. But here is where I think Charles Barkley is right. And actually, it gets to the point you made in the last conversation, JJ. I think where I disagree with you a little bit. Because I think I was getting the tone from you that, like, it doesn't matter on guys this level historically how they get their rings and how you go about it. And I just disagree with that. I think we all know Everybody in this league's not the same when it comes to winning rings. Certainly, I was a role player. No one gives a damn if I won a ring, right? They care if you're a champion, but then they also care about how you got the championship and what in what mechanism did you use. Do going to a team that had already won that you had been trying to get past and joining them and winning. Charles is right about that. Historically, and it's not just because Charles is hating on the money he makes. That's just not a fair point on the part of Kevin Durant. It's because historically, it's a fact. And it's not just in basketball. It's in any sport. If you are a guy on that level, the weight you carry and the burden you carry, it just is different. It doesn't diminish Kevin Durant's greatness as a player. I would never say that. He's one of the greatest this league has ever seen. And he's proven that he can be a guy to come through in a big way on a championship stage. But there is way to do it. There just is. There's another way and another level of scrutiny that guys of that caliber face. And I think that's what Charles was really saying. And I think that's just true. That's not just coming from Charles. That's the way the media has worked forever in terms of how they judge and how they view great players.
Okay. So you're saying KD was the best player, but it was Steph Curry's team. Steph Curry was the leader. Marcus?
I know what Steph Curry just did, but who do we consider the better NBA basketball player out of KD and Steph?
I mean, a lot of people would argue that because he got his fourth chip, that Steph passed KD.
Okay.
I mean, that was kind of up for debate on getting the finals MVP and getting another championship.
So here's my thing with this whole conversation. And JJ, the splits in the finals, amazing, right? Like, but what we actually talking about, and legs hit it a little bit. We're talking about your path. We're talking about your road. As far as how difficult it was to get there and what you had to overcome. And obviously, Katie, it's the NBA. This is the best the world got to offer when it comes to basketball players. And we know that him going to Golden State, he was a large part of them winning those championships. But we're not going to sit on TV and act like it wasn't an easier role. That's just the reality. It don't have nothing to do with KD not being a great player. KD could get 35 a game long before he got to Golden State. KD was a generational talent long before he went to the Golden State Warriors. The reason why KD was not when he went there is because we all hold KD up to a standard that only a few get a chance to be held to. That's really what this boils down to. That's what I was getting at until Molly, who is the great host, stopped me from getting ahead of where we were going. This is respect. This is saying we expect more from you than most of every guy that's ever played in this league because of who you are and what you've done as an individual. That's what Charles Barkley is saying. Now, I get it that you could turn it off and it's the old heads or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I've never had basketball conversations long before I got on television about Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant or LeBron James not being the reason that their team won championships. Yes, from a basketball tangible on the floor, we know KD had more to do with the Golden State Warriors winning the championship, but the Golden State Warriors had already did that. And the Golden State Warriors just did it again. KD is not in the conversation right now, fellas. Reality, it's hard to hear. I'm a KD fan. I think he's a top 10 player all time to ever play in the NBA. But the reality is we are going to have a different conversation if KD is not the face of an organization that wins a championship. That's reality.
All right, I want to give JJ a chance to respond here.
I just wanted to respond to what Legs was talking about. And Legs, you're right. Like, we view great players, historically great players, based on championships. But just a brief sort of, and again, I'm not an expert. I'm not like an NBA historian. But when Magic went to the Lakers, Kareem was already there. They won in 1982. They drafted James Worthy with the top 10 pick. Larry Bird, when he went to the Celtics, Robert Parrish was already there. They won. They drafted Kevin McHale with a top 10 pick. Dr. J didn't win in Philadelphia till they traded for Moses Malone. There's also, you can go down the line, all these things. Like, we just decide to knock Kevin Durant. And I really have no opinion on this, but we decide to knock Kevin Durant because he joined the team that had just beat his team. That's the only reason. If the Oklahoma City Thunder had lost earlier in the playoffs and he had gone to the Warriors, The vitriol towards him would not be the same. I really believe that. That's ultimately why we knocked Kevin Durant.
I don't think it's just that he beat his team, but what if it was just the team that won the championship? You're still joining.
They didn't win the championship.
No, but I'm saying, what if it was
the
team?
That's the reason Draymond and him talked right after the game.
But I'm saying,
because they needed him.
I'm saying, what if it wasn't the team that beat him and it's just a team that just won a championship, a team that already done that? It'd be the same conversation.
I think it's a different conversation, and I'm not sure he goes there if they win a championship.
Okay.
I think it's.
Hey, man, listen, man. If J.J. Redick a year prior, while he was at Duke, lost to North Carolina in the national championship, and then transferred to North Carolina and won one, we would have a different conversation about J.J. Redick. Well, come on, y'all.
I would have had to sit out a year, first of all, and then I'd be like a 23-year-old senior.
But that was
and
a great
analogy. That was a pretty good analogy. I like that.
They
didn't win in 2006. I don't know why we're having this conversation. They did not win.
You two have plenty more. You're coming back. I want to give Legs the last word here because he's got a roll.
Yeah, listen, I think one thing, it's amazing how things can change your perspective, too, because let's go to that series that they lost. It's a 3-1 series. Draymond Green gets suspended. It did turn the complexion of the series, and they ended up losing that. Obviously, in an incredible Game 7, and LeBron with one of the greatest defensive plays in NBA history, and Kyrie with the biggest shot in the organization's history, and they end up winning that championship. And now all of a sudden the narrative becomes, well, Golden State knew they weren't going to be able to beat that team going forward. And I just don't know that we need to take it that far. Look, I never knocked Kevin Durant when he made that decision at the time. I think players only have a finite number of years to do this, make yourself happy. He knew that he needed to get winning on his resume. He also liked the style of play there. That's what the reasons he gave us. I'll buy into it. I did not criticize him at the time for taking that road. All I said was, you are going to now create a narrative around you that is going to be something you're going to have to battle until you do it a different way. I didn't knock him for making the decision. I just know historically now what you're going to have to deal with. The other thing that he did, and Steph Curry did this as well by, you know, wanting him to come and accepting it, they both cannibalized their ability to win MVPs going forward. I don't necessarily think in 2016, Steph Curry having 1-2 still very much in the early part of his prime, Kevin Durant, 28 years old, I don't think either one of those guys were done winning MVPs, but they made the decision, we want to win, we're going to do this collectively. Okay, they accomplished all that. But here's the thing. You can't have it both ways if you're Kevin Durant. And now you find yourself in this place where this is the storyline, this last one. And he wants to answer that bell so badly, and I actually hope he does because of how great I think he is. But there's no way to avoid that is going to be the conversation because that is how great players on his level get judged historically.
That's the only reason you leave.
Yeah, we got to leave it there. But let's not. They did win the championship in 2015. I'll leave it with that. And you know that, JJ. So I'm just saying, it was already a champ, but it still already was a championship team with that same core. That's where I was going.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, our most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings awaits you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. I'm Molly Karam, and I hope you have a fabulous day. Thanks for listening to the pod. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Lightning finally struck in the Stanley Cup final, striking six times in Game 3. Tampa Bay took Game 3 6-2 Monday night, cutting the series deficit in half. Game 4 Wednesday as the Lightning look for their ninth straight home playoff win. Game 4 of the Stanley Cup final tomorrow night with the Avs up 2-0 after the Lightning took Game 3 6-2 Monday night. Our coverage begins at 8 Eastern, 6 Mountain on ABC and ESPN+. All right, four rings in eight seasons, not too shabby. Draymond Green is never one to hold back or mince words, and now that he's a champion again, don't expect anything different.
I told y'all don't let us win a championship, and clearly nobody could stop it. I warned y'all, so I'm just going to continue to destroy people on Twitter, as I have been, and Instagram stories. I really love this group. I just want to say thank you all, and as always, everybody else. I love y'all.
Draymond and the Dubs versus the world. Another parade, living their best life. So, Swaggo, I'm going to start with you here, and you can really go in any direction because I still don't understand new media, regular media. I don't know which one I am. So maybe you both can break that down for me, but we'll start with this angle. So do you agree with Dre's approach to new media?
I don't know. First of all, Molly, I don't know what new media is. Okay. I don't know what the media is doing that I didn't deal with as a player, or JJ didn't deal with as a player, or we didn't deal with coming up. We had reporters and beat writers that hated all the time. We had people on television that didn't know certain particular things about the game, and they made outlandish statements. That's been happening since the beginning of time. Guess what? I never made it personal. And that's just me in particular. I ain't saying Draymond shouldn't. I ain't saying KD shouldn't when they clap back. It just never could be personal for me because you are not doing what I'm doing. And when you're wrong, if we can have a legit conversation about it and I can tell you why you're wrong, or you could tell me why you said something, cool, all for that. But the whole new media idea, like, I love these guys having their meetings. I love that they have podcasts. I love that they can get their own word out, their own version of how they see things transpiring and what's happening. But opinions and critiques and articles have been written since the beginning of time, okay? It's going to continue to happen. Beat writers, analysts, commentators, personalities on television are going to say things about you or your team or people that you're close to that you don't like. They're going to give an opinion that you don't like or you might not even respect. And I am all for you clapping back. Just don't, this whole, let's not get this scenario started. Like something that's happening in media that ain't been happening forever, okay? Now it's just social media. Now it's just 100 million people see it immediately, as opposed to it taking a couple of days to circulate through a news cycle, unless it's by a writer that everybody pays attention to. Players have been getting criticized, critiqued, talked about wrong, given opinions about them being wrong when people don't know the full story since the beginning of the time.
But Marcus,
you choose how you respond to it. But this ain't no new media.
And I'm going to let you jump in. But I feel like it's not that old media's change. It's that there is new media. Is kind of where we're going. And when you're talking about, but I'm just saying, say it's 15 years ago or so.
As far as them having voices?
No. I'm just saying now everything's different, right? Like there's more and more podcasts, more and more social media. So old media, if I'm old media, right, traditional, that hasn't changed. But now the new media exists because of all these other platforms. That's what I'm gathering. But JJ, I'll let you go. People want to hear from you.
Well, so you're right, Molly. And Marcus, you're also right in the sense that players and athletes have been criticized and discussed ad nauseum since the beginning of time. That's I'm not going to argue with that at all. But you and I are the same generation. We played against each other in AAU basketball. Houston Hoops versus Boo Williams.
You did?
Yep. Oh, yes.
Boo Williams, yeah.
Can we get
You had Carlos Hurt, your point guard. He was a talent. He was a talent.
I need some photos.
Shooter, baby.
I need some photos of a young JJ and Swagger.
Yeah, but we.
JJ was the truth. Pulling.
Yeah, I was a killer.
I'm sure. I mean, look what he went on to do. You did all right, too, Marcus.
You did all right, too. But we are the first generation that has had to deal with what media is today. And I think that's the distinguishing factor here. You know, there's three parts of media, how we sort of talk about media now. Okay. It's traditional media. That's your newspapers. That's, I'm not going to say shows like this, but that's, you know, 6 o'clock local news. That's SportsCenter.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of traditional media.
Radio.
Columnists, sports radio. That's traditional media. Then you have aggregate media, which is the worst kind of media. And we go on this show.
Explain
and we
to the
have
audience,
to deal with
aggregate media.
Aggregate media is when someone, Clutch Points is an awful site. It's an awful platform. Clutch Points, for instance, they take something that I say or that Kevin Durant says, they take it like there's out of context and then there's out of context.
Yep.
That
out
then goes viral on
you.
50 to 100 different aggregate media sites, fan-sided.
Mm-hmm.
All these, they're not. It's not real media, but it's part of media now, aggregate media. Bleacher Report started it 12, 15 years ago, whenever they started. That essentially is what aggregate media is. Then you have social media. And this is where every single person has a platform, a voice on Instagram, on YouTube, on Twitter, of course, right? So we are the first generation that has had to deal with these two new forms of media where it is constant. And, and even this network, like PTI started this debate format.
Yeah.
But the 80s, the 90s, I mean, I used to watch ESPN every day. There would be a 6 or 7 o'clock sports center, and that would rerun till 12, and then you had strongman competition.
Yep.
You had strongman competition in the afternoon. Then you had a 6 o'clock
late
sports
night,
center.
Yep.
And a lot of it was news telling.
Yep.
It was news telling, reporting on the score. Let's give a preview of tonight's game. It is not the current format of what ESPN is. So over the last 15 years, and it all started pretty much with social media and these debate shows, our generation of athletes have had to deal with a different type of media pressure, media scrutiny, and media attention. You cannot argue that. You cannot argue that. The new media, I'm hoping to get clarification next week from Draymond on his definition of new media, but the new media to me, I think in its simplest form, is just athlete-driven content. Athletes using whatever platform they have, whether that is social media, whether that is a podcast, whether that is people like me and you coming on these shows and getting into the debate and expressing and using our own experiences to form opinions, that's essentially what new media is in my eyes. You brought up something I just want to point on that is so important to understand and to be cautious of, and that is personal bias. Marcus, you and I are not allowed to have personal bias when we get on these shows.
I wish I could.
I'm not allowed to have it. It would be unethical, and I wouldn't be doing my job anymore. I don't bring any personal bias to this. And that is the cautionary tale for any athlete looking to get into this new media space. And we've already seen examples of this over the last couple months. Your credibility is lost. It's lost and gone when you bring personal bias into the equation.
100%. 100%. But JJ, to your point, all right, like I'll tell you how I do my job. I watch, I listen, I give an opinion. And I'm glad you decipher between reporting and giving an opinion. And you talk about the, you talk about the forums. This is why I've enjoyed so much about what First Take has been. First Take, to, and you know this, First Take ain't nothing but a debate that you have in the barbershop. It ain't nothing but debate that we have in everyday conversation. I know
in
a lot of
rooms,
people
on the bus,
you know,
on team planes.
In locker room, we get exactly. We get on a call and we talk about lanes and things that we're gonna do, but no opinion is formulated. Molly don't call, or producers for First Take don't call and say, hey, you say this after JJ say this.
Never.
I need you to disagree. We actually challenge each other sometimes. I'm gonna take people to the back room. We challenge each other sometimes, like Molly did this morning. This don't have to be an argument. It don't have to be a debate. We can discuss this. And whatever it evolves into is how we end up having that discussion. Here's my issue, JJ, to your point, with everything that's transpiring right now with athletes, social media, obviously, it magnifies and it adds volume to how many eyes and ears. You talk about aggregate media. I 100% agree with you on how stories change from one article to the next about something you specifically said verbatim that they can turn on the television and listen to and get all of the context. I'm 100% with you on that. What I hate, though, JJ, is that I feel like now a lot of players, they confide in anger and vitriol and say it's not sensitivity. Some things are you just being sensitive, bro.
Swaggo.
Some things don't even.
Swaggo, do
me a
favor.
All right, go ahead. I know we got to go.
No, we got to hit a commercial break, but I'm glad we're having this conversation, and I do feel like there's more meat on the bone. I want to hear the rest of what you have to say, and I have a couple follow-up questions, so we can get back to this in the second hour, but really interesting discussion.